Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Erchin Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins at the upper part of Daf Yutis, where you see a new Perek beginning. We are beginning the fifth Perek of Erechin. The Mishnah says, Ha'oimer Mishkoli Olai. No saying mishkoloi. If a person says, I am accepting a vow to dedicate my weight to the Beis HaMikdash, so he has to give his weight in kesef, kesef, v'im zohav, zohav. If it be in silver, so be it. And if it be in gold, so be it. Maise be'imo shel yirakmiya Sha'omro Mishkal Biti Olai, the mother of a girl named Yermatia, said, I want to give the weight of my daughter to the Beis HaMikdash. The also Yushalayim, she traveled to Yushalayim. The Shokla, she weighed her daughter. The Nosma Mishkolazov, and gave her weight in gold. Mishkal Yodi Olai, a person declares he wants to give the weight of his hand. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Memalei Chovis Mayim, in other words, how do you determine the weight of someone's hand? So Rabbi Yehuda gives you a method. You fill up a jug of water. The jug would be filled to the very brim, Umachnisa Ad Marpeko, and you insert your hand into this jug up till your elbow. Vishokel Bosar Chamor, the atzamos v'gidim. When you had put your arm into this, up to your elbow into the water, so it caused a displacement of the water. And now that you have the jug that's no longer filled to the top as a result of your arm till the elbow having been in the water, after withdrawing the water, you then take pieces of donkey meat. Provided the donkey meat is also has in it bone and sinew, so you have pieces of donkey flesh with bone and sinew together, and v'nosein l'soicha, you put it into the water, ad shetismale. So having kept the record of the weight of the donkey meat that was needed to bring the water back up to the original level, up to the rim, you will then know that that is the amount of weight that your arm represented. Before going further in the Gemara, let's take a look at the Rashi on this. The Shokel Basar Chamor. Rashi you'll see more or less across from here in the Rashi. Shemishkal Basar Chamor, the weight of donkey meat, Kemishkal Basar Adam, is like the weight of human meat. V'yu ba'oisei bosar gidim v'atzamos, and in the donkey meat there that you're weighing, there should also be bone and sinews. Lefi ma sheyesh biyad, parallel to that which is in one's arm. Lefi she'ein mishkal atzamos v'gidim shavu l'mishkal bosar, the weight of bone and sinews is different than the weight of meat. Therefore, if you want to get an accurate picture, so you would, just like one's arm contains bone and sinew, so too, the meat that you are using to determine the weight of one's arm should also have those substances as well. And then you put this donkey meat into the water, keeping track of how much it weighs, until it causes the water level to rise to the top. At this point then, you know that you have a volume of donkey meat that's equal to the volume of one's arm. Based on the weight of whatever that donkey meat was, you will give in to the Beis HaMikdash in whatever terms you're planning to pay the Beis HaMikdash. So what we've done with this displacement method is using donkey meat, assuming that the donkey meat has the same basic weight of the arm. We determined the amount of the weight amount through this water displacement. Now, there's a Rabbi Yossi raises an objection. Omar Rabbi Yossi, v'chihech efshel l'chaveng boser keneged boser v'atzomos keneged atzomos. How in the world can you be so accurate with regard to the amount of meat in the donkey meat that you're putting in there is the same amount of meat that is in one's arm, and likewise with regard to bones corresponding to bones. Since displacement is not a weight measure, so that you're not getting an accurate weight measure, you're getting a volume measure that causes the displacement. So Rabbi Yossi feels that this test doesn't really reveal an accurate weight of one's arm. So he says, Ela shomen esayad kamo hi ru'uyo lishkol. Rabbi Yossi says you simply make an estimate of how much one's arm ought to weigh and give that amount to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara. My im kesef kesef im zahav zahav. What did the Mishnah mean when after a person vows to give his weight, the payment, the Mishnah says, shall be, whether it's, if it's silver, be it, so be it in silver, and if it's gold, so be it in gold. What does the Mishnah intend by that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda explains, Piresh Kesef, Kesef, if the person taking the vow had specified, I want to give my weight in silver, so he gives it in silver. Piresh Zahav, Zahav. If he specified in gold, so he pays in gold. The Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. You don't really need a Mishnah to tell me something as obvious as that. Ha komash malon. This is what is being revealed. Taimo the Piresh. The reason he's obligated to give either the silver or the gold is because he specified that material. Ha lo Piresh. If he didn't say what material he is intending to use as payment to the Beis HaMikdash, Potar nafshe becholdehu, he can exempt himself through giving any material having that the individual's weight to the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, anything he wants to give, he can give, provided it has the same weight as him, as his own. Kirachbo, based on Rachbo's teaching. Rachbo is the name of a rov. The Omar Rachbo, in Rachbo has said, Ba'asra detakli kufra, potar nafshe afilu bekufra. In a place, Asra is a place, detakli, that they weigh, that they sell kufra, as pitch, that they sell pitch in weight, a person can exempt himself by offering his weight in terms of pitch to the Beis HaMikdash. So that if a person weighs 150 pounds, he'll give 150 pounds, or the value, the cost of 150 pounds of pitch to the Beis HaMikdash. And one can assume that this is a very inexpensive type material. Well, the Gemara says, Pshita, that's also fair, quite obvious that if we're dealing with giving, paying anything in, where a person didn't specify anything, and you're dealing with a community that they sell pitch by weight, so of course you can pay your debt to the Beis HaMikdash in pitch terms. The Gemara says, Lo, Tzricha, that this is necessary to be taught, De'ika, the Tokal, De'ika, the Kail. We're talking about a community where there are those, in terms of sales of pitch, there are those that sell it by weight, and Kyle, there are those that sell it by measure. In other words, they'll sell a barrel full of pitch. They sell it by volume rather than by weight. So, Mahu de Temo, you might have thought, Kevan de Kulu lo takli, lo, that since not everyone sells the pitch by weight, so then it doesn't constitute something that is weight-oriented, and therefore he wouldn't be able to pay his weight-based vow with something like that, something that's not sold by weight. Komash Malon, so we're informed over here that it's sufficient if some sell it by weight. It is, one is able to pay off his debt in weight. one has to leave open for questioning here that what would be the case if no one sells it by weight. Would one be able to use the material anyway based on the value of the weight of the substance? From this Gemara, the emphasis seems to be placed on the fact that it's an item that's dealt with at least partially by weight. The Gemara continues. Omar of Papa, the Asra de Takli Shamchi, in a community that they weigh Shamchi, onions, Potar Nafshe Afilu B'Shamchi. One can pay off his debt to the Beis HaMikdash. This individual had vowed to pay his weight into the Beis HaMikdash. He can pay his weight in terms of an equivalent weight of onions. Whatever the cost of that same weight of onions would be, he could pay that value to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, Pshita, that is fairly obvious. So what does Rav Papa have to tell me that for? Lo Tzricha. The Basar de Shakli, the practice in this community is that after one weighs the onions, Shadu Tre Tlosa. They put on another two or three, which is Rashi says Kederach HaMoichrin, like people when they sell things they throw a little extra on the top. So Mal Detema Botil Turas Mishkal, one might have thought that, but the fact that they aren't really selling it exactly by weight because they're throwing on a little extra, so it's not something sold by weight. And as we saw earlier in the Gemara, there seems to be this Gemara is telling us that the standard for determining what equivalent substance can be used to pay off one's weight debt, it has to be something that's sold by weight. Komash Malon, that the fact, Rav Papa reveals that the fact that they throw on two or three extra doesn't change the status of onions from being something that is in fact sold by weight. So we see from this Gemara that if a person does not specify what material he intends to pay his weight debt to the Beis HaMikdash with, he can use basically anything that's sold by weight, and then use that weight, the equivalent value of the weight of that item, to pay off his debt. Maisa b'imo shel yoramatya v'chulei. Our Mishnah shared with us a story of a mother that paid her daughter's, had made a vow to the Beis HaMikdash to pay off her daughter's weight to the Mikdash funds. We just got finished saying that if a person doesn't specify the material, he can use any material he likes, provided it's something that's sold by weight. Being that a person has a great deal of flexibility, why does the Mishnah then give us an incident that would seem to suggest that if a person doesn't specify, they must pay off in gold? So the Gemara asks, Maisa Listar, are you giving us a Maisa, an incident that contradicts the understanding of the Mishnah? We had just got finished saying that if a person doesn't specify, he can pay off with anything. Why then are you giving me an incident where the mother said, I want to give my daughter's weight to the Beis HaMikdash? She didn't seem to specify anything, and she then pays off with gold. The Gemara answers, Chisuri Mechasur V'Hochik Toni. The Mishnah is a bit abbreviated, and thusly one should understand it. And you can see we have a frame around the next few lines, because this is the way the Gemara wants you to understand the Tanaic source, namely our Mishnah. And it reads as follows, V'im Adam Choshevu, if the person who made the vow is an important individual, a man of means, of wealth, Afagav the low parish, even if he didn't specify, we expect him to pay his debt, pay his vow that he made in terms of his weight, using expensive material. So we say, even though he was not Mefaresh lefi kvodo amdinon. According to his honor and his wealth, we make our estimation of what he should pay off with. Umaisa biima shel Yermatia shomro mishkal biti olai. The mother of Yermatia had made such a vow concerning her daughter's weight. Ve'olsu shalayim v'shoklua v'nasna mishkala zahav. She came with her daughter to Yerushalayim. They weighed her, and she paid off the vow in terms of in using gold as the equivalent weight of her daughter. Omar Rav Yehuda, Ha'omer Koimosi Olai. If a person makes a vow saying that he wants to give Komosi, Komosi. Is he wants to give his height to the Beis HaMikdash. What is he expected to give? Noisein sharbit she'eno nichfaf. Sharbit is a rod. He would give a rod that is not bendable. It's a solid type of rod that is not malleable. If he says Maloi koimosi olai. He adds a word here. Maloi koimosi olai. Noisein sharbit anichfaf. Through the extra expression, we understand that he's saying something different than koimosi olai alone. So, if in the case of koimosi, he gives a non malleable rod by saying malo koimosi, he intends to say something else. And we learn from this, he gives a rod that is flexible. Chanichva, flexible, bendable. Meisvei, we ask a question. Koimosi olai. We have a source with these different expressions, koimosi olai and maloi koimosi olai. Two different expressions. We've dashed underlined maloi koimosi to focus on this one. Noisein sharbit she'enoi nichvaf. Here it says you give a rod that's not malleable, that's solid, that doesn't bend. Now compare this to what Rav Yehuda just taught. He said in the very same case of malo komasi, he gives a bendable one. This source says a non-bendable one. The Gemara answers, who, the Amar Rav Yehuda, who is an Amoira, he is based on Rabbi Akiva, he's based on the Tana Rabbi Akiva, the Dayik Lishno Yisera. His approach to deals, sales, obligations, all kinds of different statements, is to place a premium or an emphasis on language that technically speaking didn't have to be stated and was nevertheless. So this draws one's attention and shows, we'll say it shows, special intent. At this point, the Gemara is going to now give us the background for Rabbi Akiva's point of law, and we should point out that the background has nothing to do with the topic of vows and erichin and the like. It rather refers to a case of a sale. So a word or two of introduction to this topic. When a person sells a house, so it's understood in terms of the Gemara, and it might be something that's hard for us to relate to because we don't have the exact examples that the Mishnah in Bava Basra mentions, but nevertheless we have to take it right now at face value, that when a person sells his house, he does not include in the sale of the house a bor, a pit that, even though it may be located in the house proper, it's nevertheless viewed as a separate type of real estate. And therefore, the sale of a house doesn't include a bor. And that's the case if a person doesn't specify that he wants the bor included. So there's an assumption that the sale of a house does not include a bor. So therefore, you can have a person who's selling his house, but he, the seller, is keeping for himself the pit that's in the basement of this house. What about easement rights? That is, access to the bor, the path. In order to get to the bor, he'd have to essentially walk through the house that he is selling. Does he keep for himself the path, Or do we say that when he sells the house, he sells it completely, including the path that would lead to the bor? Granted, the bor is considered a separate entity and is certainly not included in a simple sale of a house. But the path is the issue right now. So we have a source that says that one who sells a house does not include in the sale lo es habor velo es hadus. Not the bor and dus are different types of pits. Those the seller keeps for himself. Afal pi shekosav, even though in the contract he writes, I'm selling you the house, umka veruma, with its depths and its heights. The fact that he has this expression in there does not serve to include the pit in the sale. Now we have two opinions. Vitzorach likach loy derech, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the main opinion for us right now. He says that the seller, if he wants to have access to a bor, to the pit that he keeps for himself, he has got to buy those rights in a separate deal. He's got to buy the rights, buy the path or the easement rights from the purchaser. The Chachomim say that since a person sells what's called ba'ayin ra'a with a minimalistic mindset, he, when selling the house and keeping the bor for himself, he is also keeping the path for himself. So according to the Chachomim, who disagree with Rabbi Akiva, there is no need for the purchaser, for the seller of the house, to buy the path to the bor. Umoide Rabbi Akiva. Now here we have to focus, because this is what's directly related to our discussion. Rabbi Akiva will concede that even though a person sells, generally speaking, with a maximalistic approach, namely, we said before, he sells it ba'ayin yofe, he sells the house to the purchaser, including the path to the bor, that he sells. Bizman she'omar loy, if the seller said to the buyer, I'm selling you the house except for the pit. Chutz me'elu, except for these. These meaning the different kinds of pits. Now, he didn't have to specify that. He didn't have to say chutz me'elu. Chutz me'elu means except for the bor. The bor wasn't included in the first place. It wasn't included, as we said, in the basic sale of a house. Why would he spell out an extra expression, I'm selling you the house except for the pit? So in such a case, she'ein tzorech likach loy derech. He, the seller, would not have to buy back the easement rights, because this expression shows us that he, in selling the house, he was keeping the path for himself. So this is an extra expression that you ordinarily wouldn't find in a sale. The Gemara goes on, Alma kevon de loy tzorech vikomar, since you have a phrase that on face value was not necessary. He didn't have to say, I'm selling you the house except for the bor. That in and of itself at face value was unnecessary. He said it anyway. Why? Litfuye milsukos, he's coming to add something. In other words, in keeping for himself the bor, he's adding to that. He's not only keeping for himself the bor, the pit, he's keeping for himself the path to it as well. So we see this concept of an extra expression drawing our attention to a special intent. So hochanami, here too with regard to the person who said maloi koimosi, instead of just saying koimosi ola, he said maloi koimosi. So hochanami kevadolo tzorech vekomar, he didn't need to say maloi, malo meaning complete height, and he said it anyway. Lutfuye milso koosi, he's coming to add something that we wouldn't have thought in the first place, and to say that his intent is strictly on height and nothing to do with thickness of the rod. If we look in the Rashi, three lines from the bottom, we have a little star. Hochanami, kevon de koimosi mashmanami goiva koimosi. Since had he said just koimosi olai, that would have conveyed the idea of his height. V'komar maloi. And he adds this word, litfuye milsa also. He's coming to add some new point ulahodia, and to inform us, she'ein daitoi elo lemidas hagoiva, that his intent is to give a rod that has only the height aspect, the height equivalent, and nothing with regard to the thickness. In other words, as far as the thickness is concerned, it could be a very, very thin, wiry substance, but it has his height, and that is what he intends to give. The Gemara now goes on with a series of questions regarding vow expressions that a person makes in these terms. Omdi mahu. The expression omdi, what does that convey? Does that convey the idea of his intent to give a rod having his height? Rochbi mahu. Yeshivosi mahu. Oivyi mahu. Hakefi mahu. Different expressions like rochbi is width. Rashi at the top says rochbi olai mahu. If a person says I want to give my width to the Beis Hamikdash, mi avi mashma sharvit rochav dugmasi. Is his intent here to give a rod that has the person's width? Oi havi mashma sharvit oroich kemidachs rochbi. Or is the intent here for a very thin rod whose length is equal to the person's width? And these other expressions, yeshivasi, literally the amount of area that he takes up when sitting, or his ovi, his thickness, hekefi would be his circumference. Mahu, what is intended. And with regard to this expression of Hekefi, Rashi adds, the second line from the top, Hekefi mahu, mi yohiv sharbit nichfach vi orosh kemidas hekefoi, is his intention to give a rod whose length is the same as his own circumference. And that would be measured simply like with a tape measure, for example, where you take the measure, or you would take a string and draw it around one's body, measuring his circumference, and then give a rod to the Beis HaMikdash having that same length. And now the thickness of the rod might be no issue. Or possibly Rashi says, Oy Dilma Sharbit of Kekefo Boy Lemesav, or some type of a rod that has the same circumference as the person himself. And that would be a rod whose entire size is like the person's circumference. So those are two possibilities. Teku. This remains unresolved. Mishkal yodi olai v'chule. Tonu rabbonan. Before we go further, we should glance at the outside margin, where we have a topic heading, the nosei. The nosei in our Gemara marking system represents topic headings, and when you see the expression mivneh, that will refer to a structural note. In this case, we have a Tanaic source, and before learning it, the note says, Ha'oimer mishkal yodi oi mishkal ragli olai. If a person makes this statement, he wants to give the weight of his arm, or the weight of his foot, his leg. We'll see a Tanaic controversy as to how much constitutes these limbs. The Rabbi Yehuda ayadei medidas ever, and the Rabbi Yossi ayadei omed. This machlokes we saw earlier. We should be a little more accurate, not in terms of how much of the limb constitutes these particular limbs, but rather how do you determine the weight of these limbs. This is the same machlokas that we saw in the Mishnah, but it's presented here in a more elaborate fashion. The Tanu Rabbana, the Gemara, continues with the Tanaic source. Mishkal yodi u'mishkal ragli olai. Person takes upon himself the vow to give his arms weight or his legs weight to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mevi chovis u'memale mayim. You would bring a barrel of water filled to the brim. Umachnis bayad ad ha'otzil, he would put his hand into the water up till his elbow, uberegel, his foot, ad ho'arkuva, until the knee. V'shokel, and then that would cause a displacement of the water, the water level thereby being reduced below the rim. And now he would weigh donkey meat, v'shokel besar chamor, givim batzamos, weigh donkey meat including sinews and bone, v'noisein l'secha atshe tismalei, and fill up the barrel that has the water in it until the water level reaches the brim again. And his knowing how much meat he put in there will tell us, as far as Rebuta is concerned, how much his own limb weighed. Even though there's no explicit proof that donkey meat weighs the same as human meat, Zecher Ledover, there is nevertheless a hint to it. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, Asher Besar Chamurim Besoram. It describes the meat of a certain people in the prophet, in Yechezkel, and it refers to their meat as being the flesh of donkeys. So we see the Navi referring to human flesh as donkey flesh. Omale Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi reacts in the same way that we saw in the Mishnah. Hech efshur lechavein boser keneged boser gidim keneged gidim atzamos keneged atzamos. The donkey meat that you're putting into the water, who is to say that it contains the same amount of bone as your arm has, or the same amount of sinews as your arm has? And as Rashi pointed out when we were learning the Mishnah, the weight of bone is different than the weight of meat. So even though you might have an accurate measure in terms of volume, which is responsible for the displacement of the water, that doesn't give you an accurate measure of weight. Amale Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Omdin, we make an approximation. We approximate that the donkey meat that I was putting into the barrel has in it the same amount of bone that one has in his arm. Amar le Rabbi Yossi, ad sha'omdin boser gidin v'atzamos. Instead of coming to that, yomodu asayad. So instead of making estimates concerning the donkey meat, so just estimate how much your arm weighs. For Behuda, what's Rabbi Yehuda's response to that? Kamo de efshir avdinan. As much as we can do in terms of actual procedure, we do. So we that's his approach to things. If you have something to do more than just a simple estimate, so do it. And then if you have no choice, then estimate. And that's what he says. We try to do as much as we can to get accuracy, and only at the point that we can't do any more, then we estimate. Above, we said in the source that the arm was put into the water when a person said Mishkal Yodi, so he puts in his arm Ad Ha'otzil. Before we go further, Otzil was meant the elbow. Before we go further, though, we have some markings that have an accompanying note to it. A diamond is featured here, and a few lines later, likewise, around here the word bayad, and later around the word boregel. In the outside margin, under our nosei, topic heading mivne, structural note, we feature a diamond. And here, the Gemara relates to what we said a little prematurely before. Hagdoras yad boregel, we're going to define what constitutes yad and what constitutes regel. These are limbs. Now, here we run into a problem when it comes to translation. Namely, the term yad, how much of that of the body is included in that? The term regel, later on, the Gemara will analyze the same thing. How much is included in that term? A very superficial translation, yad is a hand and regel is a foot. But as you can see, when we refer to yad and we tell you put it in till the elbow, so the English translation is lost when it comes to a we'll call literal translation. So that the term yad and regel is a
term that may have some flexibility dependent on which area of halacha you are talking about. So the Gemara says biyad, quoting from the source above, we said that you put into the water biyad ad ha'otzil. We have a little arrow, by the way, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, which enables you to find where this quote came from. Just you skim up a few lines, you see the corresponding arrow. So having said that the arm or the yad is measured until the elbow, v'raminu, we raise a contradiction from another area of halacha. This refers to kehanim entering the Beis HaMikdash for service, for processing korbanos. It says that he has to wash his hands before entering the service. So, kiddush yodayim v'raglayim b'mikdash ad haperek. It says that the washing of one's yodayim and feet, it's ad haperek. Rashi says ad haperek on the first narrow line, mokom chibor hakaf v'hazroa. That would be what approximately the wrist area. Alma yad lohavi elo ad haperek, until that joint. Perek is a joint, which we call the wrist. Taha yad ksiv bekra. The pasuk uses the word yad. So we see from this source that yad is the limb up till the wrist. Why then are you saying that when one vows to give the weight of his yad, he measures until his elbow? The Gemara answers, Doiraisa ad haperek. When it comes to Torah requirements or Torah legislation, it's until the wrist. Benedorim, when it comes to vows, even though vows are also Torah based, nevertheless, the area of vows, we have a different standard. Haloch achar loshon b'nei adam. We go according to the way people speak. And when a person says the word yad, his intention is to include till the elbow. Question, Udoraisa ad haperek. Is it really so that when it comes to the word yad, as it appears explicitly in the Torah, that it means up till the wrist? V'ha gabi tefillin d'chsiv yodecha. The pasuk regarding tefillin says, you shall tie the tefillin al yodecha. It says on your arm. The Tana debei Menashe, and the yeshiva of Rabbi Menashe has a Tanaic source that reads, yodecha zu kiboris. The yodecha of the Torah is a reference to the bicep, so that you see from here, you have the word yad in the Torah, and not like you said before by kiddush yodayim, the washing of the hands until the wrist. Here you see yodecha including the bicep. We're talking about an area above the person's elbow. The Gemara answers, doraisa kiboris kula. Doraisa would include even that area high up on the arm, including the bicep, which includes more than the area of the elbow. Binedorim haloch achar loshon b'nei adam. When it comes to vow taking, we base one's speech on the common use of the expression. The kiddush yodayim v'raglayim b'mikdash, as far as the washing of those limbs, hilchisa gemirila, that's governed by an oral tradition. And the oral tradition says that the washing of hands before avodas hamikdash is until the wrist alone. Likewise, we quoted above the issue of the regel. Here we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the previous star and see where this quote comes from. Bo regel ad ha'arkufa. We said if a person says he wants to give the weight of his regel, so it's measured up till the knee. And he puts, according to Rebuta, he put his leg up till the knee in the water, causing the displacement. Viraminu regolim. The pasuk says shalosh regolim. Three times during the year we come to the Beis HaMikdash, the three major holidays. And from the word, from the fact that the Torah refers to the holidays using the word regolim, prat lebale kavin, this comes to exclude people who have a who are Bali Kavin. This is a very specific situation of a person who's foot has been amputated, and we're using the word foot referring of to the area basically up till the ankle. In other words, that which you would put shoes on is called one's foot. So when if a person's foot has been amputated, he is exempt from the mitzvah of Aliyas HaRegel. So what do we see from here? The word regel indicates till the ankle, and not, as we said above, until the knee. Just technically speaking, the term Bali Kavin is an individual who has had, unfortunately, his foot amputated, and he has a prosthetic there instead. But the prosthetic is only for that level, up that area, what we call the foot, till the ankle. So the Gemara responds, and you can see we've written in the Girsa, Doiraisa Prat Lebale Kavin. On the Torah level, the word regel indicates the area till the ankle. Benedorim Haloch Achar Loshon Bnei Adam. When it comes to vows, there we follow common speech. In common speech, when the word regel is used, it means till the knee. Question, Doraisa Prat Lebale Kavin, is that really so? That on when the Torah uses the word regel explicitly, it means the area till the ankle alone? V'ha gabi chalitza dichtiv raglo. Regarding the process of chalitza. Chalitza is a process that a yevama does when she is rejected in marriage by the surviving brother, her husband's surviving brother. The general, just a word of what this is for those who are not familiar. If a man dies, leaving a man who is married dies, leaving no children, and he leaves a surviving brother. So the almona, the widow, is expected to do yibum. Yibum is to marry the brother of the deceased. In the event that the brother of the deceased does not want to marry her, so there is a shoe removal ceremony known as chalitza that takes place, whereby she, the almona, removes a shoe from his regel. Now, here we have to, we don't want to translate the word, we want to see the definition of regel through the eyes of the halacha of chalitza, the shoe removal. Vitana. The Tanaic source says, Cholza minhu arkuva ulamata chalitzasa kshera. If a person unfortunately had his part of his leg amputated, if there remains a piece of leg below the knee, so that the person's knee is intact with a little stump coming forth from there, and a shoe was placed on that stump, and the Yevama would remove the shoe from that stump, the stump, namely that part that exists beyond the knee, but beyond meaning lower than the knee, but that's enough. And she has fulfilled the mitzvah of chalitza. What do we see from this? We see that up till the knee is called regel. And if that be the case, when we spoke before about people exempt from Aliyas HaRegel, it would come out that even if a person is missing his foot, he would still be obligated. As long as he has something below the knee, he should be obligated in coming to Yerushalayim 3 times a year. Because at this point, if you use the chalitza standard for defining regel, you see that as long as there is a stump below the knee, that is enough to be considered regel. After all, the shoe in the chalitza ceremony has to be removed from the regel. And you see here the stump beneath the knee fulfills that requirement. The Gemara answers, Shiny Hasam, the case of chalitza is different, and it can't be used to prove what a regel is. The Omar Kraw, in the case of chalitza, it says, Me'al Raglo. The shoe must be removed from above the foot. Now that expression, Me'al Raglo, would then, in effect, tell us that there's a basic thing called foot, which the area till the ankle, and then the shoe is removed even me'al raglo, from an area above the raglo. Well, if you're saying that as far as chalitza is concerned, as far as the shoe removal ceremony is concerned, then you're not limited to the to the what we call the foot itself, but even above that, ihachi lamalo merakuvanami, then why not go all the way, even above the knee? Even if a person, let us say, had his leg amputated to a point above the knee, a shoe removal should have also been acceptable. The Gemara answers, that's too high up. Me'al, the Pasuk used the word me'al. Me'al raglo. Velo me'al de me'al. Not above the above. So that you have your basic foot, then the area above the foot, that's till the knee, and then above that would be called above the above. Omar Rav Popo. Shma mino, from this discussion we learn, hai istavira, the ankle bone, the bone that forms the ankle, we'll call it the back of one's foot, that area, ad aro nochis. It's viewed as a singular bone. Now, in terms of anatomy and actual bone structure, this is an interesting issue because there may be sections of that area of the foot that has cartilage in it. Nevertheless, halachically speaking, we're saying that that area called the istavira, the ankle, is a bone that continues ad ara nochis, is considered a singular unit till the floor. The isal gadaitach mifsak posik, if we were to view it as having a separation in it, meaning we would not consider it a single solid entity, havile istavira me'al, then the ankle is already considered above. Veshoka, the shok is the calf or the area between the ankle and the knee, that is the shok, that would then be me'al the me'al. So just to go over this last point, it's important for us to say that if you want to say that the chalitza ceremony is kosher, even if the person's entire foot were amputated, foot including the ankle, we'll say, it's important for us to say that the ankle bone is a solid entity till the floor. Otherwise, the upper part of the back of the foot would be considered already me'al raglo, and the area above that would have been me'al de me'al, even though you haven't gotten above the knee. And yet we're saying that that whole area from the ankle till the knee is called me'al raglo, and not me'al de me'al. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Ashi Omar afilu temo mifsek pasik, he says, even if you do call the ankle area, the bone constituting the back of the foot, something that has a separation in it, that it's not considered one solid entity, kol de bahadi karo ke karo domi, anything though that's at the same level as the foot is considered the foot, so that even if it's viewed as being made of separate bones, it's nevertheless considered the regel, and the area above that is still kosher as me'al raglo for the chalitza ceremony. The Mishnah, demei yodi olai. One wants to give, not here we're not talking about weight, we're talking about value of one's yad. Shomen oiso, we make an evaluation, kama hu shava biyad ubelo yad, how much is he worth with an arm and without. Ze chomer b'nedarim mibe'erchin. This is an area or an example of astringency when it comes to nedarim, which is a value dedication, as opposed to erchin, which is a Torah value, a Torah rate dedication. What do we mean by that? As long as we're talking about non-vital organs, if one wants to say, I want to give the erech, let us say, of an arm, the erech of a leg, that would have no meaning. It would not be binding. It would not create any obligation because limbs do not have an erech. Limbs have a domim value. Domim is a market value. And the term nidorim is associated with market value. So that if a person says, demei yodi, that has value. It has bearing. It has the power to obligate. If a person said erech yodi olai, it would not obligate. That shows us that the realm of nedarim has an area of stringency above that of erechin. The Gemara asks, Hechi Shaiminon Lei. How do we estimate this? How do we calculate this value that the Mishnah mentioned? Before we go further, we have in the outside margin a Nosei Mivneh heading. The double underline is featured. These highlight the Shnei Deos, two opinions, Hechi Shaiminon B'Misha Omar D'mei Yodi Olai. How do we calculate the amount he has to give the person who said Demei Yodi Olai? So the Gemara answers, number one, Omar Rava Oim Din Oisoi Oimid Shel Nezikin. Rashi Oimid Shel Nezikin Kemoish Oimdim Odom Shekita Lo Chavero Yodo. The same way we would make an evaluation concerning a person whose arm was removed, was cut off by some attacking individual. Shomen oisoi ke'eved hanimkar b'shuk. Rashi explains, we evaluate him as if he were a slave sold in the market. Kamo hoya yofa kodem lochein, v'kamo hu yofa achshav. How much would he have been worth beforehand, and how much is he worth now? Now, in order to determine how much he's worth now, we simply see how much people would pay for a person as he is with missing an arm. And we have to then also calculate how much would he have been worth. It's somewhat hypothetical, but how much would he have been worth had he had his arm? And that difference is what is paid. In this case, that's what's considered demei yodi, the value of his arm. Omar le Abaye. Abaye doesn't like this approach. Mi dummy. How can you compare? Hasam gavra zilahu. Hacha gavra shaviyahu. In the Oimed Shel Nezikin, where a person's arm has already been cut off, when he is looked upon, he's looked upon as having a low rate, an inexpensive rate. That's called gavra zila. People see him already in his injured state. Rashi says, "Hosam gavra zilahu shikvar nikto yodo vafilu tchilas domav sha'imdim ato kama yoyofa kodem lachein." This will have an influence even on the amount they will say he was originally worth when he was still whole. Ein nishoymen ela bezoil. It's evaluated cheaply. They see a person already in this unfortunate state. So when you look at a person in this unfortunate state and try to imagine how much he would have been worth when he was at better times, still you're not going to get an accurate picture, because people are going to give a deflated amount even regarding his original state. Because they see him as he is right now. And I guess it's hard for people to imagine how he would have been, so that they may say, okay, he would have been worth more, but not that much more. So you're not getting an accurate picture. Rashi goes on, Hocha gavro shvichahu. Here we're talking about the person who is making a vow, Shishtei yodov shleimois. His both arms are intact. V'tzoch loshum, you have to evaluate kama hu yofe achshav, shiyaktish domov, v'kama hu yofe im yachtichu yodov. How much is he worth now, and how much would he be worth if his arm would be cut off? So that's you'll come out with a different conclusion if you're relying on how people evaluate things versus the case of Oimed Shel Nezikin. Elo Omar Abaye. The Gemara goes on. Number two, Abaye says, Oimdin kamo odom roitze litain be'eved. How much would a person pay for a slave? Ha'oise molocha biyodoi achas, la'oise b'shte yodov. What is the difference in price people would pay for an Eved that works with one arm versus one that works with two arms? The Gemara asks, Yodo achas mainiu, the idach psiko. What do you mean he works with one arm and the other arm is cut off? Well then, hainu hach, that's the same thing as the Oimed Shel Nezikin. If you're going to tell me how much would people pay for an Eved that has his arm cut off, well, that's what we said above. What is Abaye saying new? Elo, what he means to say is yodoi muhteves l'raboi rishon. This is a person who's a slave. However, there's some type of arrangement here where he is allowed to work the work that he does with one of his arms, whatever production he does with one of his two arms, that income goes to his original master. So that this slave was sold, let's say, from one person to another, and the buyer realizes that the guy that he bought can serve him only using one of his two arms. The other arm is still reserved for his original master. So here we have a person that looks healthy, he's complete, but how much less would a person pay for an Eved who he knows is going to serve him using only one arm, while the other arm is still reserved for the original owner? So that difference is what we call the price or the value of the arm. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a triangle with a Nosei Mivneh heading that accompanies this section of Gemara. Sidro Shel She'elois, a series of questions. Behefi Oimdin, how do we evaluate B'mikrim Shonim She'ha'oimer D'mei Yodi Olai, different cases of a person saying that he wants to give the value of his arm. The Gemara. Boi Rava Omduhu Oimed Shel Nezikin. Let us say a person went through the damage evaluation. We made a reference to what Oimed Shel Nezikin was before. And by the way, it's interesting to note that Rava is asking the question Lishitaso, who said that the way we calculate Demei Yodi is through Oimed Shel Nezikin. So we have to, disregard in this particular section Abaye's objections. Assuming for the time being, because we're dealing with Rava, that an Oimed Shel Nezikin is an accurate way of concluding value. Let us say a person had been evaluated because he was in fact damaged by someone, the Omar, and now this person, after having been evaluated for damage purposes, he now vows Demei Domi Olai. He wants to give his value to the base Hamikdash. Mahu. Mi Omar ho amduhu chalazimna. Do we say that he was already evaluated, and there's no need to evaluate him again? Because when we were dealing with the Oimed Shel Nezikin, the person had been injured, damaged. So we made a calculation already for damage payments. We made a calculation how much the person is worth. Now, when he wants to give his value to the Beis HaMikdash, do we have to make a new evaluation? After all, he was evaluated already. Oidilma, or possibly shiny umdana debe asara me umdana debe tlosa. Evaluations, when made for damage purposes, are made by three. Three people evaluate. Evaluations made for dedication purposes, where a person dedicates values of things to the Beis HaMikdash, that is done by a group of 10. So it could be that even though he experienced an umdana shel nezikin, that isn't the same type of umdana as an umdana of Beis HaMikdash. Now, im tintzelomar shiny umdana de be'asora me umdana de be'klos. So if you say that there is a difference between the evaluation made by 10 as opposed to an evaluation made by 3, Omar Domi Olai. Imagine this question. A person says, I want to give my value to the Beis HaMikdash Viandu, and he went through a proper evaluation of 10. The Chozer V'Omar Domi Olai. And then he said again, I want to give my value. Mahu. What do we say about this case? Ha Chavadai Ho Amdu Be'asora here. Well, he was already evaluated by 10 for his first vow. So he doesn't need to be evaluated again, Oy Dilma, or possibly Shevach Beini Ubeini. Maybe there is appreciation in the interim between the first vow and the second vow, and therefore we would need to make a new evaluation. Another question. Omar Domi Olai Velo Omduhu. A person vowed he wants to give his value, but he wasn't evaluated. And in the meantime, V'chozer V'yomer Domi Olai Mahu. He says again, he wants to give his value. Hocha vadai here, certainly, b'chad zimno amdinalei, one evaluation will be sufficient, and he'll just give twice that amount because he vowed twice. Oy Dilma, kevan deboze achar ze nodar, It could be that since he vowed on separate occasions, two separate vows, Tre Zimni Amdinon Le, he needs to go through two evaluations.
And
if you take the approach that since he articulated his vow, his two vows separately, that necessitates two separate evaluations, what about this case? We're here at the fourth line from the top of Daf Chof. Omar Shnei Domi Olai Bevas Achas. In one shot, he says, I want to give twice my value.
Mahu.
Hocha. How do we look at this? So here, also two sides of the question. Hocha Valai Bevas Achas Nodar Bevas Achas Amdinolei. He took his vow in one shot. So one evaluation would be enough, oidilma, or possibly kevan di omar shnei, since he used the word two. He said twice my value, kaze achar ze domi. It has the same strength as if it were stated one after the other, hence requiring two evaluations. Im timtzelomar kevan di ka omar sheni or shnei kaze achar ze domi. Omduhu me'elov mahu. What would be the halacha if it was evaluated me'elov? Mi amrinon ha omid me'elov v'koi? Do we say that an evaluation was made like by the way, on its own? Oduma bo'inon kavona la'umdina. Or do you say that there has to be intent when an evaluation is made? In other words, there has to be an intent that we are now evaluating this person because of a vow that he made. In other words, the first side of this, the setup here is omdu me'elov, is that a person was exposed to an evaluation without specific intent for evaluating because of a vow. Is that a sufficient type evaluation? Or no, o dilma bo'inon kavona lumdono, there has to be intent when the evaluation is being made. So we have five questions. Pshot meho chado. Let's conclude one of them, one of the questions. In fact, the fifth question, disnan. Domi olai umes. It's said in the Mishnah, in the upcoming Mishnah, a person said domi olai. He took this vow, giving his value, and he died. Lo yitnu yorshim, she'en domim lemesim. The heirs don't pay because there is no value to the dead. V'isalka daitoch amduhu me'elov havi umdina. If one is to think that an evaluation made on its own without specific intent does constitute an umdina, ho omid v'koi, mi'iko gavra dolo shovi arba zuzi. This person, when he was alive, he had a value. There's no person that has a value of less than 4 zuz, a type of coin, 4 zuz. So, yet this source says that the heirs give nothing, indicating to us that even though there was an automatic type of evaluation because of this acceptance that there was no person worth less than 4 zuz, they nevertheless give nothing. That's because the umdana needed to have intent for an evaluation because of a vow, and that didn't happen. The Gemara rejects this proof. Amdu me'elov nochis l'umdana. In a case where a formal evaluation was made, even if it wasn't made with intent as an evaluation for a vow, but a formal evaluation was made, domi olai, the case represented in this Tanaic source where a person said, I want to give my value, no formal evaluation was made. It was simply a certain acceptance that people have a value, but a formal evaluation wasn't made at all, leaving us room to think that if a person had been once evaluated, not attached to a formal vow, that might still be good enough. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.